Let's get this horse on the show, on the road.
Hey, everybody, what's up? It's me, your host, Dangerous ASMR, and we're back with another Drunk and Dangerous. And it's the year 2023. I am doing this one officially, my first non-live D&D for the year, my first major book post Moon People, which was a whole big saga of book after book, after book, after potentially incestuous question mark relationship continuing on. And potentially weird alien conspiracy anti-Semitic stuff at the very end. I don't think any book could possibly ever live up to the clusterfuckery that was the Moon People series. And if this is your first time for a Drunk and Dangerous, and you're here and you're saying, well, I have nothing better to do, because let's be honest, you wouldn't be here otherwise. I have nothing better to do. Let me check this out. I'm warning you away now. Nothing that I read is good. And if it is, I've fucked up somewhere. Okay. Everything herein and thereafter that I am narrating is, it's not good. And if you're expecting an actual story that I'm just narrating, that will also be very disappointing. It's mostly rants because, you know, I pick the worst of the worst to read so we can all cringe at it together. Mostly so I look good in comparison. You know, I'm not going to sit there and read out some Pulitzer Prize winning novel, all right? I am absolutely the person that would go to the club with the friend who had some horrible facial deformity. So I'm like, yeah, I'm a 5 now, bitch. Anyway, so we're done with Moon People. We have shot out of that atmosphere. We have gone far away out of potentially space incest lizard town, and we are now back on planet Earth with a brand new book. There is actually a part 2, so if I like this one enough, if it is entertainingly bad good enough, then we could potentially continue to part 2, because I've already downloaded it on my Kindle app. Question mark if that was a good idea or not, we'll find out, but it's taking up space on my phone as we speak. What caused me to find this particular book, like with Moon People, it was a list I found online of the worst books ever written, and there was a lot that I had, you know, seen before or I'd heard about before, and I'd never heard about Moon People, and it was a horrible gift that kept on taking, and we're finally free of it. We're free of its curse. I finished the end of that whatever. I mean, the fact that he was touched by God's golden light and then, like, spread golden glitter wherever he went was, it was peak Gary Stu, and I will never find another book that reaches that height. I really don't think. It was amazing in how bad it was. Just stunningly, shockingly bad. So shockingly inept. I mean, amazingly so on every front. I've never seen it. So don't expect that from this. I mean, thank God, depending on who you ask, either boo or thank God we're free of that. If you ask me, I think I'm not going to jinx myself here because I have a lot of fear after Moon People. I came into that book so optimistic and I left so jaded. I left a broken woman. And so, well, hopefully I will be able to piece myself back together with this new series, which I found via a, I want to say terrible, but I don't remember it well enough to really grade it. But I remember it not being good and enough to make fun of. a movie that I found on Tubi, the free movie site slash app that I have on my smart TV, because all of them are smart now, so they can show you ads 24/7. Yes, we never get tired of those. Especially if you look up one thing like once and then your ads have decided you want that forever and you never stop seeing it. Fucking kill me. I need to clear my cookies. Anyway, I watched this really, really bad, obviously shot on either a cell phone or a very, very low cost budget kind of camera with no thought put to acting or audio or lighting or any of this stuff. But it said it was based on a book. And I was like, no way. The Whore Next Door is based on a book. I have to see this book. And I found it on Amazon, sure enough, and there was a sequel. And I got a couple of paragraphs in, and I thought, I need to stop so I can share this beautiful literary masterpiece with the weirdos on my Patreon at large, which I say with all fondness because I obviously am a weirdo myself. I spent some of my childhood trying to pretend I wasn't, but it was all in vain. I'm reading The Whore Next Door while I am just a little bit intoxicated. Ignore that sound. That is punctuating how averagely intoxicated I am, all right? It's not my fault. It came right at me, officer. I was just sitting here innocently, and my headphone cord attacked me. So, we are free of moon people, we are back on Earth, and we are reading about The Whore Next Door. It is by, what is this guy's name, Hamid? I don't know how to pronounce it. Well, anyway, he wrote this book called The Whore Next Door, and we're going to read it. It's, dramatic. And I'm not going to spoil anything that I remember from the movie, except at some point there was a baby, but it wasn't a baby. It was a bundle of towels. And you could tell because they angled the camera so you could see past, like, the swaddling to see that instead of a face, it was just a fucking bundle of towels. Or you've smothered that baby to death because it is covered in towels like a mummy. I don't know why they couldn't buy a plastic doll or something that looked like a kid. No, just a bundle of towels. It shows the care that was put. And you know, when I originally looked this book up, because I did spend my valuable time looking into this, yeah, valuable, I say with air quotes, the reviews were very mixed. There were very low reviews, and there were just a ton of glowing reviews, which I don't want to ever catch the ire of an author, lest word get back to them and then they become enraged that I am saying something possibly negative about their treasured work. I love all of these books that I read. They bring me joy. That does not mean they are necessarily well written. And I feel like that deserves to be brought into the light of day. And, that's my statement. The end. Okay, so we're going to work our way into this. Hopefully it's good. There's very little I remember even about reading this book, except a very few select parts that I went, okay, what the fuck? But we'll find out. We'll all what the fuck together, shall we? The Whore Next Door. Who doesn't? I mean, wow, a next door whore. That's convenient. I thought DoorDash was convenient. Now we have WhoreDash, and she's literally right next door. Give me the $69 special. Chapter 1, GladEye. His name's GladEye. GladEye. One word, one name, GladEye. And I remember this from the movie because I was like, the fuck? Who named you? If your name is Glad Eye and you're listening to this, I'm sorry. That's kind of a weird name. In my, maybe you're from a culture where every other guy is named Glad Eye, but I doubt it. And like, I don't want to be rude. All right. Cultural differences are what they are. I've never met a single motherfucker in my life named Glad Eye. And that's how it's pronounced because I watched the movie. Glad Eye had it all. A beautiful wife who was proudly carrying his first child, money, and a great job. They had been saving for the past 5 years to build their dream house from the ground up in Virginia Beach. In all actuality, they had enough now, but they still wanted to wait. For the house? Okay. I'm totally sober. With his salary as the vice president of marketing with Dominion Power and his wife's salary as a nurse practitioner, they had a combined income of nearly $200,000 annually. Glad Eye was never what you considered fine physically, but his personality, intelligence, and his ability to pay attention to details made him a very desirable man. He can see details, bitch. Marry him. He came from humble beginnings. He was an only child and didn't learn that the man that raised him as his father was actually his stepfather until he was almost graduating from high school. His mother sensed something special about her son. But it wasn't until she had him tested in the first grade that she was told he was gifted. From grades 1 to 12, he attended some of the top schools in the state of Virginia. Pat yourself on the back harder. Even though he didn't have much, he was very particular about the things that he did have. He was extremely organized. When he was a teenager, his mother would come in his room, and if she moved a pen off of his desk or pulled the shades up a certain way, he could tell when he got home from school that she was in his room. His mother would shake her head because she knew that he was becoming just like her. Why is she always going into his fucking room? And that reminds me of Misery, the movie where she has hairs taped between the doors. Like, this kid's coming home like, oh my God, the hair was broken. You were in my room. His mother tried her best to raise Glad Eye to the best of her ability, but when the only man that she loved suddenly had taken ill and passed away, Bert, as all her friends called her, well, what's her actual name? Why is she called Bert? Did they tell us? No, they didn't tell us her name. What the fuck? Okay, what do you think her name? All I thought was Alberta, like Canada. Is it Bertha? All I thought was Alberta, but that's not a name. That's a place. Bert, as all of her friends, don't call me Bert. Like, I'd imagine, like, out of nowhere, your friends just start calling you Bert. Like, why? Like, you look like Bert from Bert and Ernie. No, it's not a compliment. Eat it, Bert. Big eyebrowed son of a bitch. All her friends called her, started to become distant from not only her son, but the whole world. This led Glad Eye to fend and make decisions for himself. Because of his grades, Glad Eye had his choice of all the Ivy League colleges in the nation. Really? Because of your grades? I don't believe you, because grades are such a small part nowadays. It has to be, like, a bunch of different shit that you've done. You could get, like, the best grades ever and won't be enough. What did you do on the side? Other than, like, hate your mom or something. Like, do you be like, well, I'm really good at reconnaissance because I've caught my mom, like, 17 times going into my room. But he chose to accept an academic scholarship to the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia, and this afforded him the opportunity to be closer to his mother. all seemed to be going well in college. He would come home every break, holiday, and some weekends to check up on his mother. He was very happy when he found out that his mother had finally found another man. And they were expecting their first child together. Her second. I don't know. I feel like if I was in college and my mom... Like, I'd be happy if my mom found love and she'd been divorced, but... Like, you're sec. I'm already in college. Did you have me super young? Because otherwise, like, damn, that's a huge, huge fucking gap. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I guess I'm too selfish. GLaDI is extra not selfish. And I'm like, but what about me? It makes me feel weird. Me. You know, so already F, because this character's unrealistic because he's not self-serving enough. Because, like, this isn't projection. That's just real life. All right, let's see. Yeah, she got knocked up. She has an adult kid. Now she's pregnant. After she had his little sister, Tammy, and the T-Rex, she had finally gone back to work for the University of Richmond as an admissions counselor. GLaDI was proud of his mother, and she was so proud of him as well. Okay, so they're about to, like, die in a car accident, right? Because, like, when you say shit like that, then it's like dot, dot, dot. And then one rainy night, you know, one winter day. Oh, my God, right? Like, it's about to happen. When he was supposed to be in class, he decided to surprise his mother and baby sister instead. I was fucking right. Jesus Christ. When he got home, he found a dozen police cars in front of his mother's apartment. "Keep the change," GLaDI yelled, rushing out of the cab as he barged through the news crew and growing crowd that stood behind the yellow tape. "What the hell?" he said as he was stopped by one of the many police officers that were at the scene. "I live here," he said, pushing through the police officers that stood guard in front of the yellow tape. One officer motioned for GLaDI to step forward as he held the tape up to allow him to access the restricted area.
"Are you the son?"
the officer asked with sad eyes. He's like Russell Crowe, just go with it.
"What happened to my mother?"
GLaDI yelled. He's very upset. He immediately ran in the door of the modest home and found his mother's longtime boyfriend, Carl, and father of Tammy, sitting on the couch, sobbing uncontrollably.
"What happened?"
he said as he approached Carl.
"Ah, GLaDI, man, it's not good," he burst out. "It's not good."
Then he started crying hysterically. GLaDI couldn't understand a word he uttered. His stomach knotted up as he had never seen a man cry the way Carl was crying.
"What is it?"
GLaDI pleaded.
"It's your mother,"
he cried.
"She damn your god!"
"What?"
GLaDI shouted as he jumped off the couch and paced back and forth.
"Gone! What do you mean, gone? She left you?"
"Yeah, that's why. That's why all the cops came. Hey, you got broken up with. We need backup," he asked. But in his heart, he knew exactly what his stepfather meant. Carl didn't respond. He just kept his head down and continued sobbing. A female detective that was trying her best to console the men began to talk.
Mr. Davis, there is no easy way to tell you this, but we have recovered your mother's Dodge Caravan from the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, and we have discovered two female bodies that were identified as your mother and your sis."
"What?"
GLaDI interjected.
"No!"
There's lots of O's.
"No! What happened? Did she get sick? I mean, what happened?"
"Yeah, she got sick. She had a cold on the way home, and she coughed her way into the river."
Mr. Davis, please sit down. I will tell you what we have so far, the detective said. By the way, she continued, my name is Detective Shawlings. I am so sorry for your loss.
Okay, Detective Shawlings.
Your stepfather has already identified the bodies. I have given him my business card.
She said, handing one to GladEye as well. Sorry, your mom's dead. Here's my card. She explained to GladEye about postpartum and how they believe that it played a part in his mother's suicide and sister's murder. Did he even know that was a thing, or did she just blurt that out? She's like, yeah, postpartum's hard. That's why your mom killed your sister. Anyway, here's my card. Bye. Thanks. Wow. Our government tax dollars at work. I see how it is. Although he loved his mother because she was all he had, his heart grew black for her at the thought of her killing herself and his baby sister and leaving him in the world all alone. Although he ended up graduating from college and marrying his college sweetheart, he was never, ever the same after the only family that he had was taken away from him by the hands of the only family that he had. Okay, so it's like a squared disappointment.
Baby,
GladEye said to Canary as she plopped down on his lap.
Damn, I love you, woman.
He boasted as he rubbed his firm hands against Canary's rising stomach. What the fuck is that? It's like an alien inside.
You ready, girl?
He joked with his wife as he rubbed her thighs. His joystick was harder than a roll of quarters from her sexiness. Is it the width of a roll of quarters? It's like hot dog size.
Are you?
She threw the question back at him like a fastball. As she seductively rubbed her thick bottom against his hardened rod. He moaned as his pump matched her grind. He grabbed her and lightly lifted her so that she straddled him. Oh, he's using a southern dialect in this?
You are so damn sexy, girl.
He joked using a southern dialect.
Shit, not with this big-ass stomach,
she interjected as she palmed her belly with her hands. Although she was 7.5 months pregnant, she carried it very well because she looked more like she was no more than 3 months. Very important. Women, take note how you are not allowed to look as pregnant as you are. Less pregnant, the better. How dare nature take its course? Shame. He softly kissed her neck as he made his way to her small breast. Her hardened nipples saluted his lips. No, don't use that. Don't use that term. They saluted his lips, bitch. No. She caressed his face with her hands as he tongued her nipples, bringing her to ridiculous orgasmic levels. Damn, baby, ung, she moaned as she climaxed. UNGH, ung. She went straight ung. Damn, baby, you made me a caveman, ung.
Fire, me fire.
She was amazed at how GladEye was the only man that had given her an orgasm from sucking her nipples. That sounds like somebody, like, posting on their Facebook, like, haha, lol, gave my girlfriend an orgasm by sucking her nipples. What do you mean other guys don't do that, lol? All right, okay, I get it. You're amazing. You're so great. Let's give you an award. She loved him to death. college sweethearts. It was just she loved him to death, comma, college sweethearts, comma. Okay, she loved him to death, college sweethearts. He was all she knew. That's not healthy. In one motion, Glad-Eye lifted the pregnant beauty up and carried her into their master bedroom, gently laying her down. Canary slid her jeans to her knees, almost ripping her panties off. I hope you don't mean literally, because that's ridiculous. That would take a lot of force, unless your underwear are old and holy. That would take a lot of force. Like, I have some, like, lacy G-string type shit, and you think, oh, that'd be easy to rip off. Yeah, and not without hurting the fuck out of yourself. Becomes like a piece of floss. It digs into your flesh. You can't rip that off easily. Who is so inclined to literally rip their clothing? That takes more effort than is entirely necessary. And to be frank, clothing, everything costs too much nowadays with inflation. So I don't want to be ripping my underwear. That shit is like ridiculously expensive. Have you been to like a Victoria's Secret? And that's not like the low end of lingerie. You go high end stuff. You're talking hundreds of dollars for panties. You better not be ripping that shit off or you will be getting a bill. That's very sexy, I know. I'm just saying, you don't rip your underwear. Who does that? That's a lot of weird effort. Like, you're trying too hard. This isn't a TikTok. What are you doing? Oh, no, I missed the worst part of that statement and it wasn't ripping the panties off. I'm going to start from the beginning. Canary slid her jeans to her knees, almost ripping her panties off. I stopped there, but I should have gone on, giving her lover access to her throbbing love box. This guy is really determined to find new euphemisms for genitals and sex, and I'm totally here for it. Do not stop. I need these throbbing love boxes and cocks like rolls of quarters. Please keep feeding the meter with your hot love box. Mmm. He's going to be feeding her meter by putting his roll of quarters in her hot throbbing love box. And if it wins, it plays an orgasm sound.
You so nasty,
he whispered as he tongued her middle. That sounds like your stomach, thanking her for the easy access that she had given him.
Ung! Yes, baby damn!
There's no comma, you're getting baby damn. Canary moaned as he ate her into submission. She was gone. Now it just says Tan, so I guess we're going to somebody else, and their name is Tan. I can't relate, me so pale. Tan stood in front of her floor-length mirror, trying on one of her many wigs. She loved Cher and often imitated her when she put on her long Indian hair, as she liked to call it. Well, I wouldn't, but you do you, Tan. Although her own hair was very pretty and healthy, she insisted on wearing wigs. Also can't relate with this fucking scraggly ass shit. It can't hold up to anything. What are with these people with, like, strong, durable hair? I demand new hair. I demand my body to start making it better because it's not doing a great job, just straight up. So I feel, but, like, she has good, strong, healthy hair and she wants wigs. Fuck you. The wigs aren't meant for you. They're meant for people like me. They're sad, not beautiful hair. I see how it is. But, your Indian hair. I don't know. That feels a little weird. Feels a little race weird. Like, maybe I'm just, like, showing my American right now. But feels kind of strange. Like, there's other adjectives you could give it, right? I don't know. She was shaped like a model. At least that is what she heard from people that saw her. Everybody? That's terrifying. Some pod people shit. What does shaped like a model even mean? Have you seen most models? They're like very underweight. She's skinny and needs to eat. but she's very tall. Underneath the ponytail and the sweats, one could tell that Tan was a dime, judging by today's standards. Which is what? What are today's standards? I don't know. It's very vague. As a child, she had it rough. She never knew her mother or father. She was given to the state of Virginia as an orphan and shuffled from one foster family to another. She wasn't popular at all. She was skinny with no ass, and most boys didn't want to talk to her. She ended up being sexually abused at the hands of many of the men that were supposed to be her custodial parents. Oof. This caused her to be distrustful of men and people in general. I'm sure no one will hurt her, I'm sure. She actually became an introvert, as she felt more comfortable when she was by herself. When she turned 18 years old, she was given a stipend check and was set free of the institution life. She tried to get information from her last set of foster parents about her real parents, but they would never tell her anything. After years of trying to do so with no success, she had given up, but always felt like one day she would meet up with her real family again. The thing she wanted most in the world was to be a part of something, because all of her life she was always the outcast. If only there was a way to show us this without telling us, but that sounds impossible. As a grown woman, nothing much changed with Tan, except her physical appearance and her age. I mean, yes! I didn't assume she stopped time and aging. She still had to breathe and eat. Excrete waste. After graduating from high school, she thought about training as a nurse's assistant, but figured that would require talking. I mean, most jobs do. If you count out talking, you count out most jobs. So she went to the local community college and began taking public speaking classes. Okay, that's better than just being like, my job must have no talking. Besides working, Tan had nothing to look forward to during the day. She had been working at Walmart for the past 5 years, and she felt that that was good enough for her. She dated here and there, but decided to take a break from dating when she found out that the guy she was dating was married, and the woman started calling her number, threatening her. Okay, this woman's going to be English now, just because, and it's not going to be good, and don't at me. I don't want to hear it. I know this isn't realistic. I'll be like, oh, that wasn't a good English act. Like, of course it fucking wasn't. Of course it wasn't. Really? Give me the benefit of the doubt. Come on, I'm not Tan. All I'm saying, yo, she remembered the woman saying, 'cause if I see you in the street, I'ma whip your ass. You know, just like that's what I'm imagining it. She remembered blowing up her ex-cell, trying to find out why he didn't tell her that he was married. Hint, he's an asshole. Hampton Roads was a small area of Virginia, so it would only be a matter of time before she found out. Of course he lied. Oh, he's Southern.
What up? Yeah, what up, cuh?
He asked in his Southern accent. None of it's going to be good. You don't get that.
I got like 6 missed calls from you. What's up?
She's English, right?
So why you ain't answer?
She asked, kind of annoyed.
Well, I was on the ship, shorty.
He lied. It was not like she couldn't meet men. She just didn't really go to the places where she could meet them. Tan was just not a people's person. She always managed to embarrass herself whenever she was around groups of people. After 3 years of dating him, Tan realized that he was not going to leave his wife, so she opted out of the relationship and never really looked back, which is good because she would have turned into a pillar of salt. She took off her Walmart uniform top and placed it on the arm of the chair. She was deep into her thoughts when she heard sounds coming from the apartment next door. Tan looked at her watch.
Oh, shit, they early today.
She could feel her middle tingling. I cannot tell you how much I fucking detest that turn of phrase. Your vagina is not in the middle of... Just stop. Don't call it that. That sounds like something a child would say. That sounds like some weird childish turn of phrase to avoid saying what the genitals are. It's your middle. What the fuck is that? Is she gonna have to go tinkle later? I hate it. I fucking can't stand it. It's juvenile and gross. It doesn't make me feel sexual. It makes me feel weird. Like, how old are you? We can use the terms, right? Her middle was tingling. Where did the man touch you on the dolls? All I want to ask next. As the moans aroused her. Wow, those people are pretty loud if you live a house down. Oh, wait, it's an apartment. Okay, never mind. For a second, I was thinking, like, separate houses, and, like, that's terrifying. Like, that is, you are putting on a performance. Is there a megaphone involved? No, it was just me projecting my wishes, I guess. She got up from the dining table, got a drinking glass, and placed it between her ears and the walls. The walls were thin anyway, but with the glass, it was as if they were in the apartment with her. Before she did anything, she made sure the shades were closed. I would hate for one off my nosy neighbor. Yeah, it's off with two F's. Off my nosy ass neighbors to see me playing with myself. She laughed at the thought as she pulled the shade down to the window sill. While her head balanced the little glass. What the fuck? Maybe I'm just, all right, whatever. Tan fingered her middle. Stop calling it her middle. Tan fingered her middle and gyrated her hips as if she were in a trance. Have you ever met a woman? That is not how we masturbate. Where's her vibrator? What adult uses their hands? I mean, maybe you do and more, but like it's easier. And maybe I'm just super lazy, but I don't want to put in the effort when the thing vibrates and it's like way faster. My fingers get cramps. I don't like writing, let alone masturbation. That's like some solid finger work. And she's, what is she doing with her hips? Who like gyrates their hip? Okay, that's just weird. In my opinion, I'm not masturbation shaming. Again, you know, people be sensitive. The louder the moans got, the faster she would move her hips. That, again, don't you move your fingers faster, not your hips? Are you using your hips to power your fingers, not the other way around? Like, am I the only one that didn't do it that way? Like... She's like humping a pillow, but instead of a pillow, it's her fingers, and she's keeping them stationary. When it was all said and done, she had managed multiple orgasms. Tan wasn't ugly. I don't know. The fact you have to say that has me questioning. But at first sight, one could tell that she didn't put much effort into her looks. Her hair was always swept up in a disheveled ponytail. Oh, she's waiting for the Hollywood treatment. While her clothes hung off of her frame as if they were embarrassed to be on her. Damn, even your clothes don't want to be with you, loser bitch. Canary, that's what it says now. Canary. A baby canary lie in her crib, looking at the plastic stars that hung above her. As her fraternal sister lie in her matching crib playing with her plastic keys. Boom! All caps. The front door crashed to the floor. Police! Various voices were heard yelling throughout the apartment, followed by heavy footsteps. Boom! The back door came crashing in faster than the front door as the federal agents with weapons drawn sprawled across the small three-bedroom house. Boom! The female agent kicked in the bedroom door to find the young couple scrambling to cover their naked bodies. What the hell? The man asked as the agent moved in on the two. The couple had been under surveillance for the past 6 months. They watched as traffic came to and from the house nonstop until the wee hours of the morning. The agents took pictures as the traffic of people flowed like water. When the traffic of customers seemed to die down, the feds, in all caps, made their move. The loud noise startled the twin girls that lay quietly in their cribs, sending their cries echoing throughout the small house. When the female agent entered the room with the twins, she was taken aback. She heard the cries of one baby, but she didn't expect to see twins. The room seemed like it didn't even belong in the same house. The ceilings were painted as clouds. The floors were adorned in... Could you imagine if they had clouds all over their house? That'd be the dumbest shit. The floors were adorned in plush carpet. The cribs were made out of the top of the line wood. Out of the top of the line wood. Like, there's a singular wood and it's the best one. Which one? Don't ask me. While the quilting that lined the inside were amongst the best that money could buy. How can you tell? Swings and playpins were neatly stacked against the wall adjacent to the boxes of baby clothing that were never open. How again? Okay. When the raid was over, agents had recovered 2 kilos of coke and bags of E-pills with a street value of over $200,000. It's instead of just calling it E, it's E-pills, which I've never seen it written as. E-pills. Yeah, are they robotic pills? The couple also had an arsenal of weapons that were found in the twin strollers and in their diaper bags. The crowd that had formed in front of the house clapped when the twins were brought out of the house. They clap when the movie's over when the plane lands. And handed over to protective services. The couple were later led out of the house in handcuffs and driven away by DEA agents. Canary sat in her dining room with a piece of tissue in one hand and a banana in the other as she had been watching Lifetime for the last 6 hours. Does a banana feature into the Lifetime movie? Is it Lifetime like continue watching but first banana? She was crying up a storm. See, I've seen Lifetime, but I guess the ones I've seen are mostly like, you know, the drama thriller type. They're not really cry fest movies, and even when they try to tug at your heartstrings, those kind of like the Applebee's of films, really, like, they can't really evoke much of an emotional reaction from me because they're just so, they're pablum, you know, they're basic rote entertainment. I can't take it seriously because the characters are such cardboard cutouts of people, you know. I can't imagine sitting there for, maybe she's crying for something unrelated to the banana and the Lifetime. She's having a hard day. She's been watching Lifetime for 6 hours. You're not in a good place. She was crying up a storm. She was sensitive normally, but extra sensitive because she was pregnant. Her hormones were going wild. She smiled lustfully at the thought of the extra steamy lovemaking season that she and her husband had. They had a whole season last night until the early hours of the morning. She was exhausted but satisfied. I feel like a heavily pregnant woman probably wouldn't really do that, though. She fulfilled the oldest cliche in the book. She acted like a woman in the streets, but she definitely was a freak in the sheets. She didn't even feel it when her husband kissed her on the forehead and left for work. But it was his routine, so she knew that he had done it when she rolled over and his side of the bed was empty. She was an educated woman, but humble. She would give anyone her last. Anyone? I feel like you should probably have boundaries on that. Her parents had instilled those values in her. They had pushed her throughout her public school years to ensure that she qualified for a full academic scholarship. All the pushing paid off when she was admitted to the University of Charlottesville's pre-med program. Mr. and Mrs. Malloy loved their daughter Canary, but you named her Canary, so how much do you really love her? and had killed themselves to make sure that she had all that she desired. I want that to be literal. They, like, left her the life insurance policy. For you, canary. And they just run themselves through. They had owned the neighborhood grocery store for the past 15 years and planned on passing it to their only daughter.
Yes, can I help you?
Mr. Malloy asked a man that was in the snack aisle.
I'm good,
the man said, never turning around to face Mr. Malloy. Although he continued to watch the young man, he continued to wipe down the counters in preparation of closing the store for the night. He bent down to straighten out the merchandise under the counter, and when he stood back up, he found a shiny nickel-plated .38 pointed in his face. Oh, he's old.
Take anything you want,
the old man pleaded with the robber.
Shut up!
The masked man said, walking behind the counter, pushing Mr. Malloy to the floor. Sweat soaked his face as it hid behind the stocking cap.
Where is the real money at?
The man yelled as he angrily grabbed the $250 out of the register.
That's all I have, sonny. Just take the money and leave. Where is the money?
The robber yelled, kicking Mr. Malloy in the chest in between each word.
Agon!
Mr. Malloy moaned as he clutched his heart and fought to breathe. His breaths became shallower by the second.
Give me this mother...
This ma-fucker.
Give me this ma-fucker!
The robber snatched the expensive-looking watch off Mr. Malloy's wrist, leaving him to die. I like the idea that removing the watch kills him. It's a curse. Mr. Malloy grabbed the man's face, tearing through the stocking cap and leaving a scratch right above the very distinguished mole that he had over his left eye. So when you want to solve the case, that's who you're looking for. Mole, left eye, scratch. Give me this ma-fucka. Keep it in your mind. Aw, that is sad, Canary said out loud, refocusing her thoughts to the Lifetime movie that she was watching when she heard the doorbell ring. I know that's not glad, she said, referring to her version of her husband's nickname. What's his version? It's GLADO. He'll be like, I'm a real GLADO today. She's like, please fucking stop. I hope he didn't lose his key. She reluctantly got up and looked out the window to see if her husband's car was there because she knew he was a practical joker. Well, who the heck could this be? She thought as she wobbled to the door. It's gonna be pretty big. Yes, she said, looking through the peephole at the woman who stood in front of her door with what looked like a pan in her hands. That's one sentence and the end of chapter one and the end of this edition. I think it's a pretty interesting beginning. We have the whore next door, who it seems is about to be introduced to our innocent pregnant canary wobbling her way to heartache. And hopefully you come back with me and you join me this Saturday. Also, I'm doing a live if you want to be there and text me in real time about what a terrible job I'm doing and, you know, etc. I will be happy to be there next Saturday. Join me for the live then. Otherwise, I will meet you again here next week. I mean, not literally like live, but, you know, in spirit. And until then, all right, I'll see you then.